Hello and welcome to Series 6, Episode 4 of Out with Susie Ruffle. Hello. I should probably apologise, my voice sounds very croaky. I've just got up. It's 7am and this is the week that my wife and I are finally moving house. It's been a really long journey, but we've got a lovely home that we're moving into and I'm really, really, really excited to put our own little stamp on it. We got the keys a couple of days ago and it just feels very, very exciting. But today, Mum and Dad are coming up. We've left some stuff in their house for about a year because we've been moving around a bit. So they're coming up, they're bringing up the stuff. The baby will be up shortly. So I thought, right, get up, do the intro. The episode was recorded earlier in the week and just say hello and then also say, I'm sorry I sound like this. It's very, very croaky. I am very, very croaky rather than it is very, very croaky. It's very rude about myself so early in the morning. But I hope whenever you're listening to this, you're having a good day or this podcast brightens up your day in some way. I've got a brilliant episode today. Adam Johnson, you may know him as Adam Ceramic. He was on the Great Pottery Throwdown, which if you know me, and I feel like you probably feel like you might because of the podcast, and if you listen to Like-Minded Friends as well, you will know that I love any kind of TV show that also has sort of a creative and competitive element. My favourite things. Bake Off, Blown Away, Great Pottery Throwdown, Sewing Bee, love all of them. So it was very exciting to talk to him. He's got a really interesting story, lots of stuff that I didn't know about, and his journey with creativity and the bumps in the road that he's had along the way. Yeah, I just loved talking to him. Before I begin, I need to let you know, we are doing another live Out with Susie Ruffle back at the Soho Theatre. This time we're in the big room, which is very exciting, / oh my God, there's so many tickets to sell. But please come along. I haven't announced the guest yet because I haven't got the guest yet. That's the truth. I've messaged people. We'll see. But it's going to be someone brilliant. And it's going to be on the 2nd of December at the Soho Theatre. So that's a Friday, 2nd of December. I think the show's at 9-ish, maybe just after 9. So you can finish work, you can go and grab some dinner, then come to the Soho and enjoy a live episode of this very podcast. I would love to see you there. Okay, as always, let's start with some listener emails and then we'll go on to the brilliant conversation with Adam Johnson, brackets, ceramics. Hi, Susie. First off, thank you for your podcast. It brings joy to my day I didn't know I needed. It's so comforting to hear people's stories and find people to relate to. I recently saw you on tour after years of loving your comedy. I felt an overwhelming amount of joy at the show and my walk home is when I began to listen to your podcast. And wow, it's the best walk I've ever taken. I was so captivated with the podcast, I walked straight past my house. And any moment I've had free since has been spent listening. Yesterday, I listened to the one with Jude in season 1. I have re-listened to it twice. As a 21-year-old who grew up thinking she was just a lesbian, and that's why she dressed like a boy, this podcast has been everything to me. I'm still uncertain of where I fall on the gender identity spectrum, if you will, but I know that listening to podcasts like these make me feel okay about being unsure, and okay about the fact that my assigned gender at birth might not be me. It gave me so much hope and reassurance that I actually told my best friend of 15 years that I don't want him to address me as she anymore, I want to use the they-them pronouns. Which, by the way, went absolutely the best it could have done. He's amazing. I don't know when I'll figure things out for myself, but I know that I definitely like girls and that I'm definitely not one too. Thank you for your podcast and thank you for helping people like me just by being you. I'm not going to reveal your name because you haven't put a name on the end of it. I am so pleased you enjoy this podcast and it's helped you in some way on your journey. I think that quite often it feels like we need some sort of label and we need to know exactly what we are and who we are. And I think some people in our community really do. Like myself, for example, I've always known that I was a lesbian or a gay woman or however you like to call it. And that label's always really worked for me. But I think for lots of other people, labels can change throughout your life and you can work out that you're somewhere, as you say, on the gender spectrum that you didn't know that you were a little while ago, you didn't feel like that a little while ago. And as you're saying, I think feeling okay about being unsure is so brilliant. I think it's so hopeful that we're moving towards a world, hopefully, where people can be more honest about that. I'm so pleased that you're enjoying the podcast and I hope that you continue to do so. And thank you so much for your gorgeous email. Okay, let's have one more and then we'll get on to Adam. Hi, Susie. I love your stand-up and this podcast. I'm a similar age to you and I resonate with so much that you have to say. I listened to the podcast since the start and have been a fan of like-minded friends for years, so I feel like I really know you. It's been great watching your life and career develop from a distance. I was at your tour show in Farnham a few weeks ago, and it was so great to hear you talk so openly about being anxious. I am newly single and a bit heartbroken, to be honest, but I came along to your show on my own and I'm so pleased I did. I left with such a spring in my step. This podcast is my little bit of love whenever I need it. Like you, I wish I had the show when I was 15, but I'm equally grateful that I have it now as a 35-year-old. Lots of love and thanks, mate. And that's from M. I loved receiving your message. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming to the tour. Oh, I should say that to the previous emailer. Thank you for coming to the tour as well. Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you have been watching my stand-up or listening to Like-Minded Friends or indeed this show, you will know things about me from a distance. I've shared a lot over the years on podcast platforms, but I like it. And I think sharing the good and the bad, which is why I talk about being so anxious in the new show and how being a mum has changed that. And post-pandemic, I felt like I was unraveling a little bit. And I think it's good to talk about that stuff. And I'm so pleased that you connected with that. It feels like lots of people are really connecting with that part of the show. And I'm really, really pleased. I'm sorry to hear you heartbroken. Oh, I've so been there. And I hope you're doing okay. I never thought I'd think this when I was really heartbroken. This is quite a few years ago now, as you might know from the show, because I mentioned I've got a little routine about it. Maybe 8 years ago, something like that. Six or seven, eight. Oh, who knows? It's flitted away into the distance. But I'm so pleased I had that. I'm so pleased I had that heartache, because now I think I'm such a better partner to Alice. And it gave me room to meet Alice. And now I have my life and my baby and my wife. And we're moving into our house, finally. But fucking hell, being heartbroken sucks, and I hope that you're okay. Thank you so much for getting in touch. You always can. Please do. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. I always want to hear from you. Also, if you've got time, please if you've got time, it takes like literally 3 seconds. Please like and subscribe, and maybe just leave a really small review on the Apple Podcast app or any of the podcast apps. It's really helpful because it helps more people find it, which means we can get sponsorship, which means I can make more podcasts. Okay, that's all. I think my voice sounds a lot less croaky than when we started, so that's good. Let's go to the conversation now with Adam Johnson. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I hope you enjoy this chat. Oh, listener, I am so excited to share today's guest with you. Adam Johnson is a creative, a maker of beautiful things. You might know him from Series 4 of Channel 4's brilliant Great Pottery Throwdown. I loved Adam's series and I was rooting for him the whole way through. And just so you know, this was before I knew him. We're new Brighton friends. Since the show, he has made ceramics his full-time job, selling unique and beautiful pots, vases, incredibly realistic traditional biscuits. Is it Kadama?
Kadama,
forest spirits, and so much more. His work is warm, innovative, charming, humorous, and full of love. Whilst on Throwdown, Adam shared himself and his story with the world. Hello, Adam.
Hi.
I was such a big fan of you on Pottery Throwdown. I was a bit starstruck when I met you. We met a couple of weeks ago with a dear friend of ours.
Yeah, lovely Joe Lycett.
And he was like, Adam from Pottery Throwdown's coming, and his partner Dan. And I was like, great, I can't wait to be friends with them for my new life in Brighton. Was it amazing being on the show?
It was absolutely phenomenal. It was beyond a dream, because I've always watched it and wanted, like, I'm a proper fan of the show. Yeah. So I always really wanted to be in that position. Never thought I could be, because I can't throw or couldn't throw.
Right.
But thought I'd apply anyway. So I make these like little shell things. So I applied with like just a pinch pot, and they're like, can I see something glazed? And I was like, I can't glaze. And they're like, can I see something thrown? And I was like, I can't throw. And they're like, get him on the telly. So they said yes. And I was like, oh God, now I need to learn loads of stuff. Like,
how long did you have between them saying, yes, you're on it, and doing it?
We were the COVID year. So we had a little bit longer. Everything had to be sort of lengthened out because we needed to test and make sure, and we had to isolate and stuff. So it gave me kind of 2 to 3 weeks extra to just learn how to make a little bowl. And the first challenge happened to be like a cheese dome, which is essentially a bowl turned upside down. Mm-hmm. So I could do a bowl, and just the adrenaline, and I'm like a very anxious, full of energy person. So the adrenaline on the day just meant that I threw something much bigger than I could actually do. And so I, by skin of my teeth, got through episode one, and yeah,
and here you are. And then made it all the way to the final.
I know, crazy. Did not expect that. Daniel didn't expect it. He was like, see you in a couple of weeks. I didn't have enough clothes, didn't have enough plans. And then, yeah, just had to sort of wing it, fake it till you make it, I guess.
Oh, but that's what we're all doing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All of the
time. I think
that's
the key to life, that no one really knows what they're doing. And with ceramics, the best thing is that there are no wrong answers. So as long as you can make something, get it done, and show it, and it's a true piece of yourself, like, you can't be upset, can you? And like, the judges kind of liked what I made, which was good.
I think they more than kind of liked. You made Keith cry a few times.
I hope so.
I think he did cry.
Yeah. I think in my sink, he may have shed one single tear for that, but I think he preferred Peter's. But yeah, he did. He cries a lot. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he seems like a really nice guy. Can I move that?
Yes, you can. It's a present for you. So
oh my God!
You now have
an
Adam's ceramic
piece.
If you cut me in
half, keep this bit in.
This is what
this
I
is
would
what's
be.
Inside.
Yeah, and this is what I actually interviewed for Throw Down with.
And it's one of the things
before
you bought,
you
gave
it,
Joe.
Telling you everything. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. It's like a holy shell. Is that a
thing?
Oh,
I'm glad you said that.
A holy shell? Yeah. Is that a thing?
Yeah,
and I put a candle in it.
Inspired by coral. Yeah, there should be a little candle in there. So that's inspired
my God.
By coral.
I'm moving to my house next week.
Housewarming.
And this will, that is so gorgeous of you. I will kiss you in a minute, but it won't be on the lips, don't worry. Well, I mean, thank you. Oh, that is the nicest thing. No one's ever brought me a gift. So I always sort of like to do a bit of a deep dive onto the person that I'm interviewing. Ooh. And I was reading up about you today, and it said the first time you had a go on clay was when you were 9.
Yeah. So like at school, when someone's mum comes in because they're a potter, Chris, she came in and she had us all on a wheel, and I threw like a little pot that then... You didn't fire it or anything, you just took it home.
Yeah.
But my mum's still got it. She's a proper hoarder of my things. So she's still got that little, the original pot. And yeah, that's kind of where it all began. But I didn't then pick up pottery again till I was in a wheelchair, really. So there was a big gap in between first pot and then pottery journey. But
yeah.
Pottery has always been, or creativity has always been my friend, really. Like,
so let's go back. I want to go the whole way through the story.
Yeah, yeah, do.
But it, quite often we go sort of chronologically.
Yep.
So, Seaford.
Yes.
So for our listeners that, I mean, we have listeners all over the world. For someone that's maybe on the other side of the world, how would you describe Seaford?
Seaford is a lovely little English town by the seaside. So it's kind of like half a town dissected by beach. Mm-hmm. So anyone that lives in Seaford is always in the water. In the summer, and then in the winter, not really loads to do. So,
yeah.
Like, you kind of have choices, football, or for me, it was creativity.
Yeah. And it's just down the road from Brighton.
Yes. So, Seaford's just an hour's drive from Brighton. So, Brighton was like the Emerald City on the horizon for me as a gay kid growing up.
Yeah. So, it was similar for me because I was in Portsmouth, and I do remember getting the train and sort of going and seeing girls holding hands with each other and thinking, oh my God,
it happens.
Bet their mums know. Like, oh my God, I bet all their friends know. So did it feel like that for you as well?
Yeah, it was a great thing. Just a bus journey away, and you could see kind of the life that you wanted. Mm-hmm. But then going back to Seaford, maybe not the life I had as a kid in the 90s growing up.
Yeah.
So it was nice to know that there was kind of something else out there. And that's probably why I live in Brighton now, because I've kind of, from the north, lived in Seaford, moved to Wolverhampton for a bit, and then back to Brighton. I think it is it's the place that I see myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, as you know, I've only recently moved down here, and it feels like it's sort of like, oh, of course, this is where I'd raise my family, and this is where I'd sort of end up really putting down roots after sort of travelling, living all over London for years, moving around and house shares and different things. It makes sense that this is where I sort of set myself down and sort of breathe and go, oh, okay, so this is where I'm a grown-up.
Yeah.
This is my
Everyone's
new
nice
phase.
And chill. And like you said, people do walk around holding hands. It's just lovely. It's like exactly the place you saw in your head growing up, isn't it?
Like, I think so. And I think as well, like, I think people like look at someone like the UK, and sort of quite often our straight friends might say, oh, you know, homophobia doesn't really exist anymore. You don't really experience it. You know, you can get married, you can have kids. But, you know, you really sometimes have to go an hour outside of a big city to, you know, and I know it from performing all over the place, where you sort of get a slight bristle.
Yes. Yeah.
When you,
yeah.
Or if you hear sort of football chants, you think, this isn't the place to hold hands.
When there's like a big group of people and you think, oh, God, and like...
Friend or foe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. Whereas in Brighton, it's a much nicer kind of feeling. You mm-hmm. don't get scared a lot. But yeah, when we do go out and about, it is, yeah, it is different out in other places, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And I think that the draw of Brighton and the... Yeah, I guess it's just like the openness of people, because it's not just people that are sort of queer. It's just anyone that feels other.
Yeah, you can just be exactly like, whoever you are, your best self, can't you?
Exactly,
and you can
that.
Test out different things in Brighton as well.
Different versions of yourself.
No one's going to judge you. Yeah, like if I wanted to walk down the street just wearing, I don't know, anything, I could do, and I wouldn't feel that someone's going to judge me or say anything. They'd probably
I'm a goth
clap
today.
Or I'd be like, oh, I love what you're wearing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really nice, encouraging place to be.
I think you're so right.
A beautiful city.
It really is. So what was school like for you in Seaford?
School in Seaford was interesting because it was the 90s.
Yep.
So obviously there wasn't really that much out there. There weren't podcasts. Phones
nope.
didn't exist.
Nope.
Computers barely existed.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot out there for like a kid that kind of knew that they were gay, but mm-hmm. wasn't that sure. Didn't know if that was the right life for me because didn't have anything around me. It was just me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was quite lucky in that my dad got a job. Obviously a job. My dad worked. He got a job away and said to me, right, either we can get someone to come in and look after you, or you can look after yourself and I'll just make sure that the house is stocked with stuff. So it was like a bit of a...
How old were you at this point?
I was... My sister went to uni, so I was 13, yeah. So
you
should have been 18.
By yourself?
Well, yeah. So if anyone's listening from Child Services, no. but yeah, when I was 13, I essentially had a house to myself. And as long as I didn't like push it too far or have too many house parties, as long as the house still looked like clean and tidy when Dad came home to do his washing and stuff, then it was like a good deal that worked for both of us. So I basically had the 13-year-old's dream, but also it was very lonely and sad at the same time.
The idea of it sounds great,
yeah.
But then in practice...
Yeah, don't watch anything scary, because then you're like, oh my God, I'm on my own in the house.
Yeah, so. I mean, it sounds like the beginning of a horror film.
Yeah. I still haven't seen Halloween. Dan made me watch Halloween the other day, and I was like, oh my God, if I'd watched this when I was little, it would have, like, terrified me.
So did you live by yourself until you went off to uni?
Yeah. So 13 to, 18, I went to uni, 18, 19. And, yeah, so that's how I learned how to cook, how to clean, how to do all the stuff that you kind of learn when you go to uni. I was in good stead when I got to uni. Lots of people were like burning pasta.
And I was like a grown up.
Yeah. So I could do all of that stuff, but I was still very in the closet, really, kind of, because in Seaford didn't really know many gay people.
Yeah.
Did have sort of flutterings. but I guess everyone moved to Brighton, so like the pool in Seaford was very small. Kind of had a boyfriend growing up, had a girlfriend, didn't know where I wanted to be, mm-hmm. Who I wanted to be until uni. So I'd learned all the stuff about being a homemaker.
Yeah.
Went to uni, learned all the stuff about being
so my
what
true would your
self.
Routine be when you got home from school? Would you like all of a sudden be like a
I'd be
a 1950s mom,
like I am
like,
now, kind of. Like, actually, I'm probably lazier now. Now I'm living with Daniel. Like, when I was little, I kind of had a really good routine. Get home, do the washing, do the dinner, do my homework. And like I said, as long as I towed the line, like as long as I was a good kid and didn't push the boundaries, Dad would be like, yeah, it's fine. As long as he came home, the house was still standing, hadn't burned down.
And how often would your dad come home?
He'd come home pretty much every week. Like, he'd work away in the north. He was doing, like, work with water boards and stuff. So he'd go off, do meetings, and then come back maybe 2 times a week, maybe? Yeah, not necessarily on a weekend, which meant I also got to have a good party house. So I kind of did live the dream. And had a really good social life and stuff when I was little.
So were you popular at school?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Does any... No, probably not. I got bullied quite a lot by sort of the... Seaford's quite a rugby town. So there's kind of like a bit like a Netflix you see now. It's very small town, mm-hmm. rugby team, football... And then there wasn't really anything else.
Right.
So I wasn't the cool kid, but I wasn't the worst bullied, but I did hide in the art room all the time. So every lunch I'd be in the art room. Miss Taylor, best teacher ever, would be like, just sit in here, get on with whatever you want to do. She sort of nurtured my creativity. And I guess that's...
Are you still in touch with her?
Yeah. That's so nice. She still comments like now Instagram and everything, comments
so
and all my
nice.
Stuff. And we see her every now and again if we like do the open houses in Brighton, walking around.
Yeah.
And she's lovely, yeah. Still
that's
just
really
as
cool.
encouraging as ever.
Do you think people around you were aware of your sexuality before you were?
Yes. Oh, I don't know. Well,
it's okay. You don't have to have an answer to that.
I don't really know. I was like looking back, like I dyed my hair blue when I was in sixth form. So I was like definitely pushing like who I was, trying to discover who I was as a person.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. In the 90s, gay was just like a standard slur, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so I'd be like,
totally.
Oh, I dropped my bag, gay. And then I'd be like, oh my God, like, everyone knows.
Yeah, of course. Like, and of course, we were all living through Section 28 and it was just
a
totally different time. I mean, in some places, they are really, you know, rolling all that stuff back now, less so in this country. But, you know, I'm sure people that are listening are like, oh, no, that's like that here in Texas where it all,
oh, it's terrifying,
you know,
where,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's really frightening that you can feel like you can make steps forward and then it goes on pause and then you start walking backwards, which is horrifying.
That's why things like this are so good.
Well, it's why I try and put, I think it's good to try and put like out a little slice of positivity.
Yeah.
Where people can just listen to it and go, oh, okay.
Yeah,
everything's
water the
right.
garden and the good flowers will grow.
That's true. That's nice.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
So, did you do glass blowing at uni?
I did. So I blew my way through university. Boom, boom.
Yeah, right. Love it.
It was an amazing course. And I actually went there to do woodwork and metalwork because that's what I thought in my head I wanted to do.
What, like carpentry?
Yeah, I quite like the idea of being like a lumberjack or a carpenter.
Oh,
like,
I love that.
I feel
that.
Like in a different universe that Adam exists somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure.
But maybe,
check shirt.
Maybe later in life. Yeah, I have the check shirt. I just don't look as good in it
as
I'd like
you do.
To in my head. But yeah, I went there to do woodwork and metalwork. Got there and I was a bit like, this isn't my crowd of people. Like,
was it a bit...
Very
like
sort of male bravado,
right.
Like very blokey. Yeah.
Yeah,
sort of like everything that I didn't like about school and Seaford, like the rugby club, football club.
Sure.
Suddenly, that was the guys that were doing the woodwork and the metalwork. So I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to massively fit in with this crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Where is my crowd? And Wolverhampton University has loads of different things going on.
Is it a really arty university?
Super arty, because I went there to do contemporary applied arts. So that's kind
that
of
mean?
Like
what
kind of like an umbrella term for like a little bit of everything. So
okay, lovely.
Have a little amuse-bouche of each thing.
Perfect.
And glass blowing just seemed to click. It was so hands-on, and Wolverhampton is where all the industry was. So
right,
there was like massive kiln, like you know what a kiln is now. So they're like huge kilns. Kilns that you could like walk in and things, and to melt the glass you have to have a massive furnace, so there's like a big cauldron
and a glory hole
all the good
ones.
Because
I've watched Blown Away.
Oh yeah, that's amazing as well.
Yeah,
it?
So I love a show where there's a challenge and,
yes.
and there's a personal story and people are just doing their best at the thing they love.
Yeah,
it's literally my favourite TV.
Yeah,
Blown Away is a series on Netflix that's about glass blowing. I highly recommend it.
And one of the graduates from Wolverhampton
yes
does well in it.
Yes.
Without any spoilers.
Yes. So, had you done glassblowing before?
No. Well, yeah, just casually. Just
well, no, but I know that there's places you can go to like have a taste
there
session.
There are now in Brighton. There's a place on the seafront, so you can go and make a bauble and stuff. But it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
And I guess, anything arty is quite expensive.
Yeah.
And I've completely skint. I made it sound like my dad gave me loads of money and stuff, but we were like not a rich family, so he had to go and work.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Quite a skint artist, which is why I still like making things out of like loo rolls and like anything to hand, like, but glass blowing didn't have access to. That's why it looked so amazing and wonderful when I first saw it.
And it is sort of magical.
It is.
But I think anything creative is magical. Like, I was watching bits back of your series of Pottery Throwdown before talking to you today. That 1920s thing that you did for the final, can you explain what it is? It was so good.
So
the final is so good. It's like a...
An Art Deco punch
bowl. That's the word I'm looking for,
Art
sorry.
Deco.
Yeah.
It's my version of Art Deco, because as you'll see in Brighton, there's so much Art Deco heritage
here. Love
it,
yeah. And like, brilliant.
Have you ever been swimming in the Lido? Because I know you like
cold
water swimming.
No, but I need to.
Yeah, so the Lido is Salt Dean, and every now and again it's open. Mm-hmm. They're redoing it, but that's a super Art Deco building, and there's loads of great heritage in Brighton. Yeah. And Brighton obviously being like gay mecca, mm-hmm. We wanted to make it rainbow and to celebrate me and Daniel, because it was the idea of it was to celebrate the 1920s and to celebrate 100 years, because obviously we're in the 20s again. Yeah. We were like, let's celebrate gay culture and the move that there's been from the 1920s to the 2020s has been huge.
Yes.
And now we can have a gay wedding with a punch bowl at the front of it, big, colourful, non-apologetic, like bright and proud. And just for me and Dan to enjoy. And yeah, absolutely loved making it.
Yeah.
It is a little kiss to Brighton, and we will use it at our wedding.
That's so nice. That was the thing that I thought that you were so... Unapologetically makes it sound like you should be apologetic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I think I think being unapologetically yourself is so... It's so charming to watch someone like that on television, because I think so often, you know, people put on like these certain cloaks of what people want you to be or what they think you should be. And certainly, like, you know, the kind of telly I do where you're having to be like a comic and you're having to like slam a politician for a bit, you know. But when you're watching a show like Pottery Throwdown, you were just like, oh, well, this is just me.
Yeah, with pottery is great. Anything creative is great, because it does strip you back to who you intrinsically are.
Yeah.
Like, as you know, you've tried throwing a pot, you can't throw the pot that someone else has made, can you? You can only do what you can do, and that is a little slice of your heart and soul, isn't it? So as long as you're being true to yourself, your work kind of shows who you are. I don't know what I was trying to say then. But
I totally agree. It's sort of your
essence.
Like a bit of you goes into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after university, I know that you mentioned before that you had sort of a break from pottery or a break from creativity. After uni?
Well, probably not so much creativity, because I'm kind of jack of all trades, master of none. Like, if
I don't
just
know if
sat
I believe
down,
that.
Like, I'm very rarely sat down doing nothing. Like, I'll be scribbling something or sewing, doodling.
Yeah.
I'm doing any kind of thing. But just after I graduated, I got run over.
Yeah.
So that was a big life-changing event. Just
crossing
the road, got knocked down by a car, broke both my legs, broke all my teeth, broke my nose.
Oh.
And I'm smiling while I'm saying this, but like, it was a real life-changing moment. I got brain damage as well, so had amnesia for a touch.
Wow.
And then had to recover. So I was in a wheelchair for 2 years, crutches, had a Zimmer frame, which I quite like.
I didn't realise it was as long as 2 years in a wheelchair.
So wheelchair, like 18 months, and then had a Zimmer frame. So it was like hobbling around.
So
and
were you like living by yourself? This
predates. So at the time I was predates Daniel, who I'm living with now. So just back from university, came back to Seaford, and then got run over, and my plans for this big art blowing career kind of all got smashed.
Yeah.
Quite literally smashed. So everything had to change, and the way our beautiful justice system works is that they found the person who knocked me down. It was a failure to stop, which we would all call a hit and run, I would say. And so there was a way to get compensation.
Yeah.
But that takes years. That takes so long. And then you need to remember stuff. And I had amnesia. So I was like, it was impossible to like get like what happened out of me. So once my memory came back and everything, like, I still don't remember the accident, but then we could start
but
sort
maybe
of
that's
the
a good thing.
Exactly, yeah. I don't want to do
maybe
shrooms or anything, because then I'll remember it all. So it was, being in a wheelchair is a life-changing experience, just from a going to the toilet perspective.
Yeah.
So it changes you on so many base levels, because it changes the way that you live, where you can go.
Yeah.
There's so many places where you can't even go into a disabled toilet because I've lost the key.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, you're secretly using it as a storeroom, aren't you? So it's like, oh, I need to go somewhere else. Yeah, it changed me in so many ways, from amnesia, forgot a lot of my university degree, so a lot of that was gone. My plans for the future
back?
Was gone. I kind of think I know stuff now, but it's kind of like amnesia isn't like you see in the films. You don't suddenly like smell something and remember a whole year.
Yeah.
I feel like I've recreated a lot of it in my brain from like Facebook did. Oh no, it was MySpace existed then. Facebook was quite new. From like photos and from when someone tells you something.
And
then
it becomes
you create
a memory
it
somehow.
In your brain, and
yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that, but I don't know if I do. So I thought I was going to be making these big Dale Chihuly-like chandeliers. He's got one in the V&A, and he was like the person I wanted to be. But glass, you need to be mobile, you need to be quick, and
you
need to kind of. In a wheelchair, it just wouldn't work.
And presumably you've got to be really strong.
Strong,
because
yeah.
of, like, the flipping
Lots
it around
of leg
and
work.
Stuff.
And it took forever. Like, my legs were about the size of my arms, like, in terms of size. Like, I had no
muscle.
So I had to figure out things that I could do while I sat down.
Mm.
And having a kiln for glass meant that I also had a kiln for ceramics, because they're the same thing. Ceramics you can do sat down. And I had real problems with a whole multitude of things. Like when you're remembering things, it's very anxiety promoting, very scary. So I was having a tough time, got on all antidepressants and stuff, and kind of needed something to do as a mindfulness thing. And ceramics became that. So at that point in my life, ceramics kind of helped me out of a really tough situation and kind of became my friend. I still didn't know how to glaze or do any of the like proper ceramics things, but I knew I just like to sit down and do little fiddly things, like smaller versions of what I might have been making in glass in a different life in the multiverse out there somewhere. So it kind of helps you process the grieving for an old
version
of myself. Yeah.
And did it feel like you'd lost sort of, I'm guessing here, so stop me and tell me if I'm wrong, but I wonder whether when you have an accident like that and you are sort of, you sort of lose a version of yourself and you lose independence, did it also feel like you'd lost like different strains of your identity?
It does. It strips you back down to a very basic version of yourself, and then you kind of have to choose how to rebuild that. But I always say to Daniel that being gay is actually a thing that, because I was gay growing up, you kind of do a similar thing, don't you? So you project a version of yourself that you think everyone wants to see while you exist as a slightly different version. And the ideal in life is that when you come out, those two collide and flower into a beautiful thing. But that doesn't always happen. And I actually think that after the accident, because I did have to kind of rebuild my sense of identity and who I am, I could do that in a much more authentic way by sort of letting go of some of the shit from my childhood and just being able to be a more authentic version of myself, because I was maybe a bit more appreciative that you only get one chance, don't you? So you've got to be your authentic self as much as possible.
Of course. And because was there a point when you were like, oh, well, you know, I'm walking again now, or I'm just using a stick and I'm having a big, not to suggest that someone in a wheelchair couldn't go to like a gay bar or somewhere that was, but it feels like so much of our culture, not always, but I think quite often our community is like in the club.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I think maybe it's slightly different because you're in such an arty world, and I think it's quite sort of queer. Is it fair to say?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
A lot of
especially
like,
bright and arty world. Yeah.
But it feels like, I certainly remember when I was growing up, it was like, well, I don't necessarily want to go to a club all the time, but where else do I make friends that are gay?
Exactly.
And that are
you
like
kind
me?
Of think you have to be this perfectly preened version, as buff as possible, to like fit in with the cool kids.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, that's terrifying. And if you don't fit in with that archetype, then it can be really alienating.
Yeah.
But actually, I found a little pub in Eastbourne through a friend who came to visit me lots. And there was a really nice gay guy who ran that pub, who was just inclusive of everyone and would be like, I'll come in, like made sure that there was the disabled toilet, which for me at that point was a huge thing.
Yeah, of course.
And we had that really nice safe space, which was a gay club. So it kind of showed me that you don't need to be this perfect version of yourself, that queer is the full spectrum.
100%.
It's celebrating everyone, isn't it? And that little pub kind of showed me a different version of what I perceived a gay world to be, if that makes sense as well, because I probably did think I had to be clubbing all the time, I had to be wearing all the best clothes, I had to be like this idyllic version of myself, which having been run over, I was never going to be again. Yeah. So I kind of had to reconcile the two. And actually being part of a queer community where everyone is as valid is a much better world to be a part of, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. And I often find that when I talk to the people that you would assume are like really cool and, you know, they're really sort of chic people who in the club seem like they're just effortlessly doing it. And I often talk to them and they'll say like, oh no, I feel awkward and I feel anxious. And
everyone's panicking. All, no one knows what they're doing.
No, we're all going, fuck. Is this right? So how long was it after your accident and then sort of getting back into clay and finding your happiness or sense of self? Is that a good way of putting it?
I don't know if I ever have found my sense of self or ever will. I kind of feel like that's the journey in life. And the best thing about life is that it's lots of different lives within one life. Mm-hmm. And in my head, that one day I will be in a wheelchair again. So it's like, when that point comes, will I have a good back catalogue to look back on and to be sat there remembering, hopefully with a gin and tonic, and Daniel while watching the sunset? And if I get all of those little lives right, and that's finding your sense of self, isn't it? So, and if I get more me as I go, then I'll be hopefully happier at the end. And yeah, that's what we strive to do with art, with everything.
Yeah, I love that. No, you're so right. And so how long after sort of those 2 years where you were recovering and, recovering in every sense of the word, did you think, I'm going to try this ceramics thing properly?
Ooh, 15 years.
Was it as long as that? Yeah, so that's when you worked in the opticians.
Which I like that you said that, because now you're like, oh God, he's old. I didn't know how old he was.
Yeah. You've got to know, is he so nice to look at? Listen, he's so nice to look at.
So yeah, it was 15 years because I was totally broke in a wheelchair because there was loads of things, couldn't sign on, there was loads of, didn't have the brain power to do it, it was a different world then, so you couldn't just do stuff on the computer.
Oh, but also, isn't that just such a damning indictment of this country that someone can be in such a terrible way through an accident?
Yeah, they were like, well, you can work, and at one point I was like, I'm totally bedbound, I really can't. and it was just like,
But that must be horrible as well, because if someone's telling you that you're one thing and you know that you're something else, it's like a weird way of like the government gaslighting you.
It is, yeah, it's exactly that, yeah, and it makes recovering so much harder because it gives you so much more baggage to deal with.
And anger.
Which is why that's why the clay was good, because I could put all the anger into the clay. But then I was skint, so I was like, I need to do something. I need to pay rent and stuff. My family helped me loads while I was in the wheelchair, but then there is a point where you have to rejoin the real world, isn't there? And I was getting more able, so I wanted to do stuff because that's how you use it or lose it, really, with legs. So I wanted to be out and about.
So you were like learning. Did you have to learn
how to walk again? That was amazing. Wasn't amazing. Was traumatic. But actually, looking back, I look on everything quite happily because it's made me a more patient, more understanding, more appreciative person. And I got to use the cool crane in the swimming pool, so which you'll never have seen. But now I've said it, you'll notice it all the time. There's like a weird winch crane that can winch people into the swimming pool. So for about 1 minute, you're literally just suspended in midair with all of the people swimming looking at you, which is quite a...
Was that for rehab? You'd swim?
Yeah. So you're weightless in the water. Yeah. So I could do things with my legs that I couldn't do walking because I didn't have balance either. Because if you're bedbound for a long time, you lose your balance. So I had to learn it all again from scratch. And in the water was kind of my happy place because suddenly I'd gone from a point of not having all the freedoms that I had been used to being stuck in a chair. And then in the water, suddenly regained all these freedoms, can move in all directions. And yeah, just in the water, you're kind of a bit more isolated as well, aren't you? So it forces you to think about things. So yeah it's just another good mindfulness space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that weightlessness of being in water. Yeah. It's really freeing, isn't it?
Yeah, very special. That's why I love like anything water. That's why I did a whale for episode one.
Yeah.
Potter Throw Down.
There was a lot of sort of mythical... Or not just in Potter Throwdown, but also in sort of what you make now, that sort of
whimsy,
mythical, mythical sealer life.
Yeah, I love imagined worlds, and I love making things that in my head are artifacts. parts of other worlds, so we could just leave them places. In an ideal world where there wasn't like theft or vandalism or anything,
yeah,
we could leave them places and there'd be like little momentary installations and people would find them and they'd think, oh, what made that? And it'd help other people imagine and enjoy the world. Like, I like just to make silly things, really.
But I think they were so charming. I was looking at the bits and pieces that you make this morning, both on your Instagram and on your website, which, by the way, everyone, Adam Ceramics, like, have a look at it and also buy his stuff. But like the little people and the little sort of creatures, the little mushroom people. And
we love Studio Ghibli films, anything Japanese and cute. Me and Daniel absolutely love. And I think that those little imagined worlds are just, it's just fun, isn't it? And I think that pottery should be fun and anything creative should be fun. It should be a piece of you. And whether that is something very serious, it can still be very fun, can't it?
Yeah.
And I just like to put bit of fun in everything. I lost my train of thought.
I don't know whether it's the same as stand-up, but certainly for me, I know that when I'm trying very hard to write a piece of material, it doesn't come.
Yeah, you can't force it.
You can't. Like, it's,
or you've just got to go with it.
Yeah, or like it doesn't. Or if you're holding on, if you sort of want things in your career or you'd like to do a thing or you want to create a great show or do a great tour, sometimes if you want it so much that you're sort of squeezing it, I mean, it's sort of like squeezing clay in your hands and then it sort of goes to nothing. And then you're like, what was this? What was this meant to be? And the whole reason I started doing comedy was because it was fun.
Yeah.
And there
you've
was
got to keep
joy
that fun,
in it.
Don't you? Yeah. If you push it too hard, you're going to end up with just a mess. So just gently coerce things and
okay, I want to come round and make those
little
people.
Definitely come round.
I want to come round and
pottery.
Make friends to take home.
Little clay friends. That's the problem though. I do hold on to a lot of stuff as well because I'm like, oh, that's really special. That's that moment or that's that day. And Dan's like, oh my God, we're getting buried under clay.
Yeah, I mean, Dan's in the studio, I should say, and he's sort of gently nodding.
Politely.
So whilst you were working in the opticians, and I assume there was, you know, whilst you say there was sort of 2 years of you getting up and walking again, psychologically and physically and mentally, that must have been a much longer journey of sort of accepting that your life had shifted in such a way.
Yes, accepting. You do have to accept a lot, but also, and I do think that part of this is the gay journey as well, you get told to be in a box and you kind of balk against it, don't you? A bit like, actually, I might be in this box, but I'm going to make it a fabulous box. And so they told me I wouldn't be able to walk. They told me I wouldn't be able to do lots of cognitive things, which my train of thought is all over the place. But as long as you kind of go with that, then it's all right. And working in the opticians, I was like, oh, I can be happy and fun with people. So they put me right at the front of the opticians and I was helping people choose glasses and being like, oh, yes, you look absolutely fabulous. Or if they put someone didn't, I'd be like, these look awful, let's go there.
That's
just being open and
honest.
You do, exactly. I don't wear glasses, but I feel like if I did, I'd want someone to be like, Adam, no.
Please no.
These are not good.
These aren't yours.
But I'd do that and then be like, but these are the ones. So I'd make sure everyone was really happy. And that kind of worked. And then also because my brain's a bit sketchy, it's a bit all over the place, I write a lot of notes. So I've always got a notepad with me. And in an optician's, that's a really good thing because you're writing down everything that's happening. So I'd do it sort of almost robotically. And then lots of people coming to me and being like, oh, how did I do this? What happened there? And I was like, oh, this is really good tool for a workplace. And then slowly started working my way up from just being the frames advisor in an opticians to fast forward 15 years, I was regional in Boots helping out with training and stuff. So the person that couldn't really do anything, I got told I wasn't going to be able to do a lot of things and decided I'll just do it differently. And that meant that I managed to do really well in Boots because it was different to anything they had done before. And so they celebrated it. Did mean that I got stuck in a career that I didn't really want. It was glass related, so my degree kind of came true. But then we have a really creative friend, which you'll have loads of creative friends from comedy, but in Brighton there's some totally nuts outside the box people who are amazing. And we've got a couple of friends who are just phenomenal, aren't they? And they're self-employed and they do crazy, arty, amazing things that you'd never think you'd make money from. So like in the in the normal world where growing up in Seaford, I was told you have to be either a banker or a this or that, like something very starched and serious. Like in Brighton, the eccentricities are celebrated and people do make money from doing them. So we were like, if our friend Phil is amazing, he does illustrations, he does all of these cool things, and we're always wanting to do the next thing with Phil, aren't we? He's that friend that you just think he's very cool. And he was like, why don't you just do art? And I was like, well, because I need to pay a mortgage. And he's like, well, I'm doing it, like, why can't you? And I was a bit like, oh, that's, I need to step outside of my optician's box and maybe be like the me I thought I would be when I went to uni to do glass blowing.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that. But Brighton has this amazing thing called open houses, where people open their house and you fill your house with whatever arts or crafts. It could just be a table, it could be all your walls, whatever you make. And I've always done like drawing and painting and loads of different things. And Dan's a graphic designer and illustrator. So the two of us together were like, let's open house. And then that open house kind of led to both of us being freelance. And then that moment...
Because you sold stuff and you were like, oh, this is a viable thing.
Yeah. How people actually buy stuff.
That's amazing. Was that quite nerve-wracking when you were like, oh, let's sleep?
Terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying.
And was that pre-Pottery Throwdown?
That's all pre-Pottery Throwdown. So I was making like I make little mushrooms and crunkles, which are like these little tea lights with loads of holes in.
Which I've just been given.
Yeah, yes. So you've now got one for your home. So hopefully lots of people in Brighton have got those. And they're like, if you cut me in half, that's kind of what I would be, because it's like it's a non-pottery piece of pottery. And I'd make those, and I'd make these little mushrooms on originally knitting needles, but then knitting needles suddenly became really expensive, and people would put them in their garden. But then I'd do dog portraits. Dan does great gift cards and posters and stuff. So our house was like a really eccentric one, based around fun. Because we went to a lot of open houses and you kind of walk in and you look at something and it's like $8,000 and you're like, oh my God, you don't want to touch anything. You barely want to breathe just in case you knock something over. And we were like, this is amazing and this is valid. But there's also another end of the spectrum. Let's do something really crazy, kooky and fun, full of whimsy. Our friend Phil was obviously up there as one of the people that inspired us. So, yeah, we're just...
And that's lovely as well, because when you go to somewhere that's like an affordable art fair or somewhere, you know, it's great that there's the stuff that's like
crazy expensive. Yeah.
It's like, oh, that must be lovely if you're a millionaire.
Yeah. One day when I win the lottery.
It's so nice to be able to go to things and be like, oh, here's a little memento of my day out.
Yeah.
And
that makes you a little bit happy. That's that moment that I love. It's the bit where I've made something and I've made it at an affordable price so someone can buy it. And it's that moment where it's not the buying it, it's where they interact with it and it kind of, they feel that little bit of joy that I had making it, which is what I love. And it becomes quite addictive, actually. So open house did show us that we love making stuff. So we made driftwood key rings one year. We made big paintings one year with gold leaf on, didn't we? We've done like loads, jack of all trades, master of none. But that's kind of...
But artist.
Yeah, that's just people, isn't it?
Yeah,
as well, like
absolutely.
Every single shade. Like it's something for everyone. And then Pottery Throwdown happened. So and then that kind of gave us the moment to breathe, didn't it? Like did you ever watch The Good Life?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Maybe I'm quite a lot older.
I don't think you're older than me.
I think I am. I don't want to tell anyone. Don't look at Wikipedia.
I'm 36.
Oh, I'm 39. Eight.
He had a track with Dan.
No, 38. So Good Life. Good Life was that was a programme that was on when we were young. And that's how me and Dan saw ourselves as them, didn't we?
Dan's
well, I saw
young.
Us as them. And we were, poor but happy making stuff. And, like, open house never made millions or anything, but it meant that we could make the next thing. And that's my approach to anything creative. As long as I can afford to make the next thing, then I'm happy. Obviously, Pottery Throwdown meant we sold a few more things, which has meant that I can explore things like glazing, making bigger stuff. Because, like, on the show... Making a sink, I can't afford that much clay and all that much glaze. It gives you opportunities that you'd never get. And from being in a wheelchair, you kind of think, try and experience everything. So when Dan's mum was like, you should apply for Throwdown, I was like, but I can't do any of the stuff but I will. So I'll apply.
Oh, that's so nice that it was Dan's mum that encouraged
you. Yeah, just from like silly little gifts that I'd give her, because we did Christmas decorations, because you can use cookie cutters, roll out a bit of clay, use a cookie cutter, you can make Christmas decorations. Done.
Okay, easy. Can so I come around and do that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
yeah,
great. Come over. You know, we've got a new house, we're going to get a tree. It's very exciting. Yes. I'm going to have to do that.
Definitely. Yeah, there's so many things that, yeah, that we can make. Hand building is super,
yes,
super fun.
Yes.
Because so, you've thrown now, haven't you?
I have thrown.
So we'll get you hand building at,
yes,
one point.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And so now you're in this sort of very, you've got that creative life.
Yeah. Yeah, we've stepped into that creative bubble and we're doing all right so far.
Of course you are, because you've got enough to do.
Just cut you off
mid
question then.
No. There's no question. It's just a conversation. That's what happens in chit chat. You know, you talk over each other and
it's
then you listen and say
something
in front of me.
To
I'm sorry,
do,
I should have like said,
no,
please
have, like,
bring some
clay.
Clay
sculpture.
We should have made little mushroom people.
Yeah.
So the final question that I ask absolutely everyone that comes on the show. It is sort of a message to an earlier version of yourself. But then some people on the show say, oh, no, I don't like that, because if I'd been able to pick up the phone and hear something about the future, I never would have known what would happen next.
Yeah.
I never would have, you know, it's the what ifs that sort of make life interesting. So maybe someone's listening to this and maybe they've been in a situation. I'm maybe thinking of like the version of Adam not long after the accident, and when you sort of had this, you know, the language you used was, you know, your art career shattered.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe there's someone that's at that place right now where it feels like there's maybe a road to recovery from, you know, from whatever's going on in their life. If you could reach out to that person or that version of yourself and give them a hug and a bit of advice about the future, what would you say?
Oh, that's a big one. What if I had a time machine?
I
think when things shatter, you can look at them from two angles, either a mess or a fun jigsaw. And I think I look at things like they're a fun jigsaw, like I'll make the best of a bad situation. And my advice to myself would kind of be, if you put in a bit of work, life kind of only just gets better. And look at the beautiful things, always look at the silver linings. And you never know who you're going to meet, because you just need to meet the right people that spur you on and encourage you. And then life just gets exponentially better.
He tapped his partner Daniel at that point and it was gorgeous. That's perfect, the perfect way to end the pod. Thank
Yay.
You. Thank you.
That was the brilliant Adam Ceramics. Please look at everything that he's doing on Instagram and on his website. He is so brilliant. I love the stuff that he makes. I'm so excited to go to his house and make some small little sort of clay woodland creatures. I hope that you liked this conversation as much as I did. I loved it. As always, you can get in touch. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. And just to remind you, there is a live episode of Out on the 2nd of December. Christmassy, Christmas vibes. And please come along. You can get tickets at the Soho Theatre website. Or maybe mine, susieruffle.com. Okay, thank you so much. And I'll speak to you soon. Bye.